Hi, I'm Ricky Gard Diamond, the author of Screwnomics, but this isn't my book. This is the first design my publisher, She Writes Press, brought me. And I said, no, this is a great picture, but it's the economy we have now. This is not the spirit I discovered when I researched economic women, their stories, and ideas. Next. This is what my book looks like in your local bookstore and at Amazon. To show my publisher what I meant, I cut out paper dolls the way I remember doing as a girl. This image is different from a fistful of dollars. They're a connected group. They're actually made of money, not grabbing it as something separate. And they're clearly female and having fun. The subhead says what it's about, how our economy works against women, and real ways to make lasting change. But the asterisk item at the bottom laughs at what I saw in operation all around me. It's the unspoken but widely applied economic theory, I suppose, that women should always work for less, or better, for free. Next. Together, women are making change, but it's going to take many more of us understanding how and why we're in trouble to make big changes we so need. Screwnomics is different from most economic tomes because it's full of stories of women, including my own economic tale. At the end of each chapter, you'll find economic terms and ideas summed up in a quick, irreverent rehash and a cartoon by me and my colleague Pico Todd. This cartoon introduces you to the book's very different trio of girlfriends who have reconnected going back to college. Jess, who's a single mom on welfare, a more worldly Kashanda, who's decided she needs to study economics, and in the middle, clueless Suki, who thought she was set marrying a rich guy. Screwnomics hands-on workbook, Where Can I Get Some Change, up in the corner there, helps readers credit their own story, too, and shares allies and resources. The dismal science, you see, is best learned with some friends, ideally with a glass of wine or a cup of coffee and some nibbles. Economics may feel removed and far over our heads, but believe me, it is personal. It affects everyone and everything you love. Next. This isn't a book about managing your personal finances. That's important, but this book explains the bigger context of the macroeconomy affecting business and trade, where most of us live. It shows why the majority nearly always come up short. Women didn't invent those big money rules and assumptions that affect us. The field of economics has long been dominated by men, as is Wall Street even yet, and government budget making. The bigger the pile of money, the more exclusively male the territory. Next. I hate to say it, but economics is still a man's world. Right now, there's a lot of nostalgia for millionaire men to take care of the country, and I'm afraid that's something of a pipe dream the way this image is. This is an advertisement from the 1950s, not that long ago. I'm not saying it's a bad thing that some women worked hard in their homes, assuring the breadwinner some peace and praise for a job well done. That was an old ideal. And frankly, I'd like some of that adoring attention, wouldn't you? So would my husband. But now, we're all of us living in a wifeless world. Back then, no one called this sexism. The word hadn't been invented yet. Domestic violence hadn't been outed yet. But hello, hashtag time's up. There's a Me Too movement happening. Next. This is women's economic big picture. We are in the midst of some huge changes. Now, you don't usually see history presented with this kind of time structure or by all female figures, but we need a bigger context, and we've had these three stages in our Homo sapien development. First came the Paleolithic time. The Venus of Willendorf was carved about 30,000 years ago from the tusk of a woolly mammoth. The warp and woof of that small image in the corner there represents a technology that most archaeologists agree began with women who wove cordage and then carrier bags for babies and gathering food, and then looms with stone weights. We take cloth for granted now, but think how huge this discovery was with humans just coming out of the Ice Age. About 11,000 years ago, the Neolithic Age began. The climate was warming up, and archaeologists now generally believe women began agriculture. That Ceres, the Roman goddess who gave us the name for cereal, she sits atop our Vermont State House. We only usually see the last 5,000 years or so of patriarchy in our history books. The word oikonomia, or economy, dates back to ancient civilizations about 2,400 years ago with the Greeks. That's all pretty recent in the bigger picture. The small picture that you see there in the corner is of an oven that was important for producing pottery that made accumulation and trade possible, as well as the all-important bread. But then thirdly, there's our Statue of Liberty, and she marks really recent industrial times when the United States was first founded, and Adam Smith wrote The Wealth of Nations, and our first factories were founded and made, guess what, textiles. Tabitha Babbitt, an early American Shaker woman, invented the circular saw that you see here by attaching it to her spinning wheel. But here's what's most important for you to see next. Women were the first property. At the foundation of every so-called civilization and its accumulated wealth, you find women's reproductive powers held by force, law, religion, and custom as wives, concubines, and slaves. And really, the pay was lousy. Next. So how can women today know they're no longer property? Our foremothers got to work. It wasn't easy, but nevertheless, she persisted. Next. You see, property has no need for education, and we were blocked from it for a long time. But U.S. women won literacy and real education beyond embroidery and good manners, beginning only about 200 years ago. And it took a while to catch on. U.S. women were admitted to our most prestigious school, Harvard, just 45 years ago. Next. Property has no need for owning assets or income. Men won property rights from kings about 400 years ago. Under English common law, coverture and primogeniture rendered women legally invisible. Married women won the right to own property in the U.S. just 170 years ago in 1848, the same year that Seneca Falls happened. Poor women who worked for wages were not so lucky. They couldn't legally keep their wages from their husband or their father until another bill was passed in 1860, just 158 years ago. If you think that's shocking, I knew a wonderful activist who's gone now who told me about her first job at a department store in the 1930s. They sent her paycheck directly to her father, It was just the way it was, she said, men handling the money, so we girls needn't worry our pretty little heads. Next. And property certainly has no need to vote or run for office. Our foremothers finally won the vote in 1920, not yet 100 years ago. With this last election, there's more reason to cheer. We are definitely citizens now, not property. But all of these important changes occurred very, very recently in the big picture I showed you. And that, I think, is very hopeful. Next. So I hate to add yet another thing for you to do in your already too busy life. But this still exclusively male territory we call the economy, especially that upper realm called the macro, where trade wars and there's a constant battle about who's the biggest takes place, that realm needs your attention and some fresher notions from women. We cannot afford more of the same. Next. So Pico and I named our antagonist Blaise Bernays because Economan, as I call him, is a relatively small men-only club. But they're men of a particular race, a particular class, and a particular education and expectation. His philosophy is on his business card. It's your right to profit, no matter who pays. That fistful of dollars we saw in the first slide, he thinks it's his. He claims to be rational, unemotional, efficient. The numbers don't lie, he says. And he's right, but his numbers, his accounts, are way different from yours. And by the way, the word screw is not my word. It's not a woman's word. It's a man-to-man vernacular from the world of money that has made it into our common parlance. Next. This is Economan's account of our economic big picture and its evolution. Do you see any females anywhere? Does he know about biology? Next. And this is ultimate econo-mansplaining and a real-world econo-man. Also proof that we really do need to pay closer attention. Milton Friedman won the Nobel Prize for Economics in the early 70s, and this calculation is from his Nobel lecture. You might be shocked to learn that his first client was General Pinochet in Chile, who terrorized and robbed his nation, and that the economics prize was never part of Alfred Nobel's original prizes in literature, physics, chemistry, and peace. It was established by the banking world and timed rather cunningly to blur its difference. Friedman's economic graphs and language also blur the dynamics of violent power and force that Naomi Klein later named a disaster capitalism that profits from violence, disasters, illness, prisons, and arms sales. You wouldn't know it from his numbers here, would you? Next. But an economy waged as war is as old as pharaohs, emperors, and kings. The accumulation of wealth by a few men at the top of a pyramid scheme while the poor get poorer is an old story. And remember who I said was at the very foundation of this structure and way of seeing things. Next. We foundation folks may be more poor, but we number so many. And there are other economic survival methods best shared with stories and feelings, with empathy, and by listening. We've also learned that when we women put our heads together, consciousness gets raised. So it's time we talk about our last taboo subject. Next. You've seen the energy out there in the streets with women and the men who love us marching together. And it isn't lost on many that our planet Gaia is at stake today too. But too few women and men know about a female body of knowledge, resources, and allies that Scrunomics and its workbook talks about. Andrea Dworkin said it first, "Money speaks, but it speaks in a male voice." Well, here's what I found. Next. When money talks in a female voice, next. Families and home are not a separate sphere, or the informal economy, they're the foundational economy. These are pictures of Eleanor Rathbone, who wrote The Disinherited Family, and after decades got past England's mother's allowance, which sent a check directly to all mothers in Britain. Had you ever heard of her? Down here is Vermont's one and only female governor, Madeleine Cunin, who tackled similar issues having to do with child care and our working families and how to pay for it. And down here is New Zealand Minister of Parliament Marilyn Waring, who, as a young musician, noticed what she later called nonsense in national budgets, the GDP that leaves so very much out. She has influenced a whole generation of feminist economists. Next. When money talks in a female voice, next. Workers are not company or corporate costs, but assets, not property, but investors, stakeholders, and cooperative owners. Up in the corner there is Saru Jayamarunan, organizer of Restaurant Opportunity Centers, who is making a huge difference in the food industry and widening the interests of labor to a larger community. On the side there is economist Jessica Gordon Nimhard, who discovered a hidden economic story of her people. She says we need to stop studying winners and look more closely at the underdogs. And then there's Marjorie Kelly, whose organization has a goal called 50 by 50 to organize 50 million employee owners by 2050. Next. When money talks in a female voice, next. Currency and wealth needn't be scarce, and you too can own a bank. These are pictures of Gwendolyn Hallsmith and Ellen Brown up at the top there, who helped promote local economic issues, local finance, and the public banking movement. Up there also is Eleanor Ostrom, the first and only woman to win the economic almost Nobel Prize. And she wasn't an economist, but a political scientist whose analysis of how people share water and other essentials of the commons has generated a whole new school of nested economies. The caring commons currency you see there is one that I dream of to pay for those beautiful caring things that we're told we cannot afford. Next. When money talks in a female voice, next. We can stop waging economics as war and start waging life. That's a picture of Prospera, a cooperative of Latina immigrant entrepreneurs developing a line of eco-friendly cleaning products, and a group that's launching a food business soon. And down below is the image of the Self-Employed Women Association of India and how they pictured their organization, not as a construction, not as a pyramid, but as a living banyan tree. They see themselves as the many, many leaves, but they have also put down trunks that provide needed support services they can share, training academies, and even a bank to finance their work. next. These organizations have worked on local events with Screwnomics here in Vermont and in Michigan and Indiana, and I've been talking with WILF leaders in Boston and Iowa and California, which is very exciting. We're even going to the National Young Feminist Leadership Conference in Washington, D.C. in March, working together, making sure we include women of all shades, ethnicities, and sexual preferences. We can build a network of women's organizational alliances to make changes that will benefit all. Next. This event in Benton Harbor, Michigan, my hometown, devastated by racism and corporate greed, shared women's stories and knowledge. Consider a public event that crosses boundaries at the beginning or the end of your local Econo-Girlfriend conversation to highlight local issues. Unaffordable housing and education debt were the topic here. Next. Shorter on time than ever, we're finding ways to connect with less face-to-face time. Look for new resources, a page on our website that we'll share with WILF. A new shortened video introduces the book for your outreach. This PowerPoint will be posted, and we'll have short films for each of the book's 5 sections. We're working on suggested activities, posters, and handouts. I'm committed to Skype with any book group that would like me to visit. We're planning videos of women sharing Econo Nibbles on our Facebook site, so friend our Facebook page, share our tunes with your friends and other videos from all over, and sign up for our website newsletter on women's economic news. We're lost without a vision of peace and a healthier, happier world and how to get there. I am so very grateful for WILF's interest and give special thanks to WILF women who have already gone the second mile, Mary Beth Gardam, Robin Lloyd, Marguerite Adelson, and Charlotte Dennett. I think economics can be fun with a glass of wine, some nibbles, and shared laughter. I hope you'll stay in touch with your own ideas, questions, jokes, and stories. Together, let's make change.